Rewind is an award-winning insider's look at Wisconsin politics and public policy. Brought to you by Wisconsin Eye and wispolitics.com. To become a program sponsor, please send an email to rewind@wisi.org.
I believe united we stand, and we have common ground to find, and we're going to find it.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And this is Rewind. J.R., we have a podcast. How cool is that, man?
I have a hairline for podcasts.
Okay, back to work. Wisi was there. I asked the governor yesterday to respond to President Trump's immigration statement. We're full. Very interesting response on the part of the governor, Representative John Jagler, on why it's way past time to remove the term mental retardation from state records. Very emotional testimony at the public hearing on the state budget in Oak Creek, and Speaker Voss and Senate Democratic Leader Schilling on cabinet appointments made, unmade, rescinded, etc. Wisi was there.
If he believes that, he should take down the Statue of Liberty. I mean, what a statement to make about our country. We're not full. Do we need to protect against bad people coming into our country? Of course, we always have. We are better than to say, this is, we're a hotel and it says no vacancy on it, that with the flashing light. That's ridiculous.
AB 20 is a follow-up to a bill that was passed in 2011 from Representative Severson that removed the word mental retardation and the phrase in state statute. There was a woman who called me in tears who said she went to get a power of attorney and other legal matters drafted up. Similar to what I have to do with and my wife has to do with our daughter who has Down syndrome. She went and had it drafted up, and they had to use the legal term mental retardation. And she said, you know, our kids know that. Our kids know they're not supposed to say that. And she said, you're not even ended in your own building. So that's what really sparked me to get this moving. It was the very first thing I had drafted this session.
So I urge you again, this committee, to support driver's licenses in this state budget so that my uncle every morning can drive safely to open up his business, so that workers across Wisconsin can get to their jobs in farms and meat packaging and cheese companies, so that construction contractors can keep building houses all over Wisconsin and without the fear of getting pulled over by law enforcement.
So I'm asking this committee to divest from our prison system, to invest in our education system, invest in communities, invest in treatment alternatives. Which side of history will you all be on?
What we can do right now is accept the federal expansion of Badger Care. These are our own tax dollars that can be used to cover more Wisconsinites with health care.
I ask that you fund, support, and encourage an education system that has already and will continue to shape and mold students for a stronger tomorrow. Fund charter schools.
I really worry when I see my friends vaping and promising that they're going to quit. I challenged one of my friends to quit vaping for a week. She didn't last a day. My vision is that we don't lose a whole new generation to nicotine addiction. I want to thank the state for helping us to work towards creating a generation of tobacco-free kids and spreading the truth about tobacco.
I'd like to ask the committee to address the caregiver shortage. Before you was an empty wheelchair of my grandfather who passed away on Sunday. He spent 87 days institutionalized because we couldn't get him home. Because there were no caregivers, the agencies, and us, we couldn't find anyone. I know you guys have a budget, and you got to figure out what you got to do. Could you please, please, really look at this? I mean, this might be a Medicaid thing, and it might just be whatever, but our caregivers really need more respect for what they do. We might be able to recruit more people to come back into this field.
I support Senator Fitzgerald. I think he's doing the right thing. What I would say is, I hope maybe one of you out of this press conference would ask Governor Evers why we haven't yet gotten a nominee to head WEDA. If housing and economic development is such a huge priority of the Evers administration, they can't find one person 5 months in to take the job. How about HEAB? They talk about wanting to refinance student debt. Who's the person who's the nominee for HEAB? There isn't one. So I feel like they're so focused on being political, scoring points, trying to fill all these things that I think most people say, wait a minute, why aren't you doing your day job?
I am challenged with the lack of cabinet secretaries that should be on our calendar today. But to get small and petty and politically sniping over not bringing forward those cabinet secretaries, come on, we're better than that. I know that you don't like what happened in December or November. Some of you may not have come to grips with it. I keep talking about the five stages of grief. But you don't control everything anymore.
Topic one, Judge Neubauer conceded.
Yep.
There'll be no recount. We spent a lot of time talking about a recount. No surprise that she's not seeking it. 5,600 votes, a lot.
Closer to 6,000. But I was making calls on Monday and Tuesday to all the counties that were coming in and had a spreadsheet. The AP total for election night was what was coming in. And there were a couple of changes. But in the end, after getting all but 17 counties in over 2 days, his lead actually expanded, now like by all of 100 votes, give or take a dozen. But, you know, it underscored that unless there was a major reporting error from a county, and there were some small mistakes, but unless there was some major error, you're not going to overturn a 6,000-vote margin through a recount. And it's just the reality of the situation for Neubauer, and she conceded.
Right. And Judge Hagedorn said, the race is finished. We have won. I am deeply humbled and grateful. The people of Wisconsin have placed their trust in me. He will be joining the court late in the summer, I think. September 1 in there. And Judge Hagedorn said that he was running to get partisan influences out of our court, and I hope he lives up to his promise. But she also, you reported yesterday, she's now going to seek another term?
Yes, the appeals court. And a couple things to keep in mind looking forward. With Hagedorn, he's 41 years old.
Yes, she's 61.
He's positioned to be in that court for a long time because, look, we don't often reject incumbent justices in Wisconsin. Lewis Butler, 2008. The last one before that was like 1960-something. The guy was like, one, was part of a decision to allow the Milwaukee Braves to leave Milwaukee, and two, was near mandatory retirement age anyway or something like that. So, you know, barring something crazy, he could be there for a long time. Now, you know, I'm not saying he wants to be there for 30 years. He may find other interests, but that position is going to be influential in the court for decades to come. With Neubauer, I went back and looked in the 12 county that is in her appeals court district, she only got like 36.6%.
She lost Racine County, her home county.
So, look, the Second Court of Appeals is a conservative appeals court, but Neubauer was appointed by Jim Doyle in 2007. She'd kind of run, and one of her campaigns was kind of like a tough-on-crime campaign. She hadn't really presented herself as a partisan in those races. Now the Supreme Court race has painted her in a partisan light. Now, what she obviously keeps talking about being, you know, nonpartisan, unbiased, those kind of, that was her line in her campaign, right?
Yes, yes.
But because of who lined up behind these guys, it painted her in that partisan light. That makes it much more difficult for her in that district because of its political leaning. However, she also will be on the ballot, assuming she does actually run, the same time as a Democratic presidential primary. We've talked about that influence in the Supreme Court race with Daniel Kelly in 2020. At the appeals court level, though, it could be a big boost for Neubauer, too, because, yes, that is a conservative district. But if there's no primary for president on the Republican side, how do you, Jim, turn out to match even the Democrats who live in that district turning out next April?
And so, let's also point out that who will be appointing the next member of District 2 Court of Appeals?
Tony Evers.
Okay, let's talk about appointments, but let's narrow it. I want to get to the lack of Senate action on the cabinet secretaries later. So let's just focus on the new Supreme Court fight. We have the 3rd District Court of Appeals, which refused to throw out, help me track this correctly, the 15 appointments that the governor rescinded and did not reappoint.
Yes.
Yes.
Basically, what happened was this Dane County judge ruled all the actions in the extraordinary session in December were null and void.
Yep, all of them.
The Republican lawmakers went to the appeals court, asked for a stay of that decision.
Wausau-based District 3.
And they went there for a reason. There are two Walker appointees in that court. It's got a conservative reputation.
Judge Stark is the chief. She was named by Governor Walker.
In between the Dane court ruling and the stay that was issued eventually, Evers rescinded the appointments.
Yes.
Republicans told the 3rd District, hey, that was not right. Your stay made clear that those points were back in office. The court came down and said, actually, no.
No.
One, Governor Evers, who argued that was not the case, that he acted properly, he was closer to what we actually said. Mm-hmm. And two, you can't make a stay retroactive. There was that window for Evers to act, and he acted, and you can't turn it now. The one hope from that decision for people like Ellen Novak and others is that the court also said, eventually, this case will be decided on the merits.
Yes.
They're only talking about this action right now, right?
Mm, yeah.
The merits will come up. At that point, a court or a judge or judges
right.
will have that opportunity to weigh on this issue.
They made a process ruling, and now the Republicans have formally asked the state Supreme Court to make a definitive ruling on these appointments, and the state Supreme Court said, we'd like to hear arguments from one side on Monday and the response on Tuesday.
They actually, and what they said was, the Republican lawmakers said, this was so egregious, what Evers did was so egregious, we need a decision now, immediately. If at worst, rule by Friday, today, April 12th, so they can be back in the office on April 15th, Monday. Court said, no, we're going to hear from people about that.
We want briefs filed, but they could issue a ruling as early as next week.
Yeah.
Or they could set it for orals.
What it does, though, is it leaves people like Ellen Novak in limbo.
Yes.
Because now we're talking, we're getting close to a month now, right, since that first judge, the judge's decision came down, Dane County. So how do you proceed if you're somebody like her? I mean, do you go get another job right now? Do you wait for the Supreme Court to act? If the Supreme Court says oral arguments,
right.
it could be a months-long delay in this issue. So there are a lot of, that puts them in a difficult position.
Okay, now let's go to the Senate lack, the GOP Senate lack of action mm-hmm. on the governor's cabinet appointees. I got a call this morning. How many of Governor Evers' cabinet appointees have been confirmed? The answer is zero. And Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald said, I think some of those cabinet members are going to be in trouble. JR, is Mr. Fitzgerald engaging in hostage-taking here?
Well,
is that overstated?
Well, look, this rumor started percolating late last week, and basically calls about it Monday, about, look, is there like a movement afoot in the Republican caucus in the Senate to essentially punish Evers by denying some cabinet picks and retribution for what's happening with
right.
These 15? Because remember, the 82 rescinded, Evers reappointed 67,
yep.
which Fitzgerald sent back and said, we're not going to even deal with this because it's, in his mind, illegal. But these 15 are still in limbo. And on the floor of the Senate on Tuesday, Jennifer Schilling, Senate Leader, said, you
to
guys
get small and petty and politically sniping over not bringing forward those cabinet secretaries, come on, we're better than that.
You're slow-walking this. So we got Fitzgerald in his office, and he said, yeah, there are members of his caucus who want to reject cabinet picks because of what's going on. They are hot about this. Fitzgerald said he warned Maggie Gow, Evers' chief of staff, if you rescind these appointments, it's going to cause problems in our caucus, and here we go. This is the outcome of this. Now, take a deep breath for a second. One, this is totally inside baseball. Like, the average voter is not keying into this stuff.
Two, cabinet secretaries can serve unless they are specifically turned down by the Senate. Three, go.
I have no doubt from talking to people that there is a wing of that Republican caucus that wants to reject at least a couple of these cabinet picks.
Starting with Craig Thompson, right?
Andrea Palm at Health Services, because the number three spot is a person who's worked for Planned Parenthood. Don Krim from DSPIS, Department of State Professional Services, had the personal issue with the child
the
abuse.
Anger issue with her child.
So there's some baggage there.
Who's on the top of that list? When I see a news release from Senator Strobel, again coming after Craig Thompson,
definitely.
I got to ask, okay, top of the list?
Those three are kind of the top. Here's the issue, though. It's a 19-member caucus. There are 14 Democrats. Any appointment you put on the floor of the Senate needs only three Republican votes plus the 14 Dems to pass.
Right.
All 14 Democrats almost assuredly will vote for any of the governor's nominees. So while that wing of the caucus may be hot to go out and reject some of these folks, you've got to ask, is everybody there? Because you have a more moderate wing of people who might go, this is not really what we want to do. And then, by the way, let's link the Marquette poll. The Marquette poll found that if you asked voters, 800 registered voters, who's trying hard to cooperate? Evers with the legislature or legislature with Evers? Overwhelmingly, it was Evers' legislature.
Yes.
You are feeding into that perception, Republicans, if you reject these picks. And by the way, you make Evers more sympathetic in this ongoing back and forth about what's going on. Now, again, I don't think the average voter is paying attention to this stuff.
They aren't.
But in all this chaos, the Capitol we're seeing right now, it's not going to help your cause, people tell me, for Republican, to be doing stuff like this. But at the same time, Republicans feel like, and Fitz was very specific about this, you don't treat somebody like Ellen Novak the way she was treated. In his words, She showed up for work after the stay was issued by the 3rd District Court of Appeals. So she's coming to work. They stopped her in the lobby, talked to her, and said, you can't come in.
Okay, but she has a long GOP pedigree in that yep. building, former legal counsel to Speaker Gard, and then she was Mr. Walker, Secretary of the Department of Administration. He then moved her to the Public Service Commission.
There's a personal relationship there, and they're that much more offended because of that, you know, yeah. that they feel like that's not right.
Yeah. Okay, and then the governor said it's not going to work. First of all, the work of the state has to go on regardless of whether it's retribution or not. You alluded to the Marquette poll, JR. My takeaway is so far, Wisconsin Democrats still feel the burn. I'm going to use that cheap campaign slogan. When asked who they supported, we're a year away from the April presidential primary. 32% Bernie, 29% Joe, 17% Elizabeth, 11% Kamala Harris, 10% Beto. I hope they don't mind if I'm just using their first names. Any surprises there?
No, not really. I mean,
because Sanders won our primary.
Name ID driven poll.
Yeah.
Basically is what it is.
Okay. Then job approval. Governor Evers, 47%, 1 percentage point higher than Mr. Trump. However, the negatives, the disapproves on President Trump, 52%. The disapproves on Mr. Evers, 15 percentage point less, 37%. Any surprises there?
No. And Evers' numbers have moved, both approve and disapprove.
Since January.
From January. And what Charles Franklin, the poll director, was that it's mainly Republicans who had no opinion of Evers back in January going to the disapprove column. And that's a function of partisanship, right? So, you know, but he's still got a net positive, you know, plus 10. Other thing is, he's in a unique territory from what we're used to for 8 years, because Scott Walker had nearly universal name ID from like February 14th of 2011 when he introduced Act 10 and that whole controversy. He became a household name immediately. Most governors don't get there in the first 4 years of his or her term.
Right.
It's just a slog. So yeah.
Slog, that's a good term. In yesterday's interview, I interviewed the governor on his first 100 days in office. I asked the former science teacher to grade it. He said, I have an incomplete. Okay. no surprise there. But let's look at six other issues that the Marquette poll centered on. Number one, let's go with special education funding. Governor Evers told me yesterday, look, my bottom line, $600 million more for special ed. Is something I care about very deeply. 3-to-1 support for that. And eliminate mandatory minimums. That's a criminal justice reform. 71% support medical marijuana, which is a key issue. A big issue in the Capitol since it's been twinned up with decriminalization of up to 30 grams. Let's just talk about medical marijuana. 83% support, 12% oppose. By the way, JR, just as an aside, the governor survived esophageal cancer 10 or 11 years ago. I asked him in the course of his treatment, did anybody ever recommend that he use medical marijuana? He said, no, it never came up, just an aside. Recreational marijuana, the Charles Franklin poll, 59% support, 36% oppose. Medicaid expansion, the governor mentioned this yesterday in my interview, 70% support, 23% oppose. Complete non-starter with the Republicans. Mm-hmm. Complete yeah. non-starter.
A lot of these things... let's start with recreational marijuana and medical marijuana. Scott Fitzgerald said, no way, not under his watch. Medicaid expansion, you're asking Republicans who for 6 years now have charted a different path with Governor Walker yep. about Medicaid to basically say they made a mistake 6 years ago. They're not going back on that. Now, what I am watching with Medicaid, though, is there some kind of hybrid model they can do, some way to draw more federal money? Because what Evers has done in his budget is,
right.
you know, remember Medicaid is a state-federal program. So you put state money in, the feds give you more.
Right.
They're wondering, is there a way to get more matching dollars from the feds to like put more money into things like reimbursement rates for hospitals and other programs? Because, you know, there's been a demand from the hospital association, from nursing homes, et cetera, for more. They say, look, you're not paying us enough. You're not covering the cost people are treating under your program.
And as you and I heard joint finance question our health services secretary, Andrea Palm. At one point, Senator Darling said, what about the way Arkansas expanded MA? And Secretary Palm said, I'm going to do my homework. Now, I'm going to be doing a Newsmakers with her a week from today, so I'll be asking about that. But I do not understand enough to describe it right now for how Arkansas mm-hmm. expanded Medicaid. Well, just one more, increase the minimum wage. 57% yes, 38% no. Any big surprises out of these six issues, JR?
No, and let's also note that he wants to cap the or freeze the voucher program and charter program. That wasn't very popular in the poll. Neither was a gas tax increase.
Right. So. Okay. There is no mythical median valued home, JR, but in terms of measuring impact on the property tax bill than you and I get every December, it was intriguing to me that the Fiscal Bureau finally released an estimate. Increase in the mythical median valued home under Governor Evers' budget, it would go up, according to the Fiscal Bureau, $56, which is only 2%. When Senator Darlings opened the public hearings by saying, we cannot afford a budget that spends $6 billion more, I was kind of surprised that Fiscal Bureau scores the increase in property taxes at only $56 or 2% on this mythical home. Were you?
No, because remember, Evers pumped so much money into education. So remember,
$1.5 billion.
A large part of our property tax picture is there are revenue limits on schools, municipalities, tech colleges. So if you look at the school one all by itself, let's say this is the whole silo of money, right? Mm-hmm. If it's a mix of property tax dollars and state dollars, the more state money you put in, the less room there is for property tax dollars, right? Now, if you raise that cap, which Evers also is proposing, you allow room for growth of property tax.
2% max, I think,
again,
for the munis.
The more state money you put in, the less property taxes you can rely on.
Okay.
So that helps offset some of this. What's also interesting is the Evers proposal would produce a smaller increase than current law, which is what Republicans put in place with Scott Walker, right? So the projection would have been a little bit higher. Now, we're talking like, I think, less than $40 over 2 years, but still, he can say, look, mine would be smaller. Republicans keep saying, though, yeah, but it's the biggest increase in 10 years.
Well, also, but a factor is the number of referendums mm-hmm. for school bond issues, buildings, and remodelings and maintenance is the number is continuing to pass.
Evers
Sun
office.
Prairie just passed a major one for more than $100 million, and Nina lost by 500 votes. But that is a part of this property tax picture, the governor has said. I'm not defending his budget.
But Evers' office said, responding to his numbers, that he can't control certain things, like in his office's estimation, the $2 billion in property taxes voters have approved additionally since 2018. But where he can have an impact, his budget makes sense. However, I will bet you money that when Republicans are done with this budget, they will have a smaller property tax increase or none, compared to what Walker or Evers is proposing.
I'm not going to take that bet. I agree with you. Hey, before we get into stock reports, a very poignant State of the Tribes message from the Oneida Chair, Tahasi Hill. Let's listen to Chairman Hill talk about the climate change, the impact on Native Americans, and it's time, the Chairman Hill said, for 31 schools that are still using Indian mascots to no longer use those mascots. Please.
Act 31 is existing law which requires all public school districts and pre-service education programs to provide instruction on tribal history, culture, and sovereignty. The importance of this legislation reaches outside of the classroom into Wisconsin homes, where it has the power to break stereotypes. We can only move forward when we have an accurate understanding of our past and the continued survival of our cultures today. Another legislative focus important to Wisconsin tribal nations is eliminating the use of Indian mascots, logos, and nicknames in educational facilities supported by the state of Wisconsin. The use of Indian imagery stereotypes and dehumanizes our cultures and Native American people for the sake of entertainment. Furthermore, it encourages racist and vulgar behavior in the name of school spirit, which is both socially and academically detrimental to all children. Furthermore, I call on Wisconsin to stand on the forefront of climate change discussions. Native people have called Wisconsin home for thousands of years. As a result of global warming and its effect on the environment, we could lose essential hunting, fishing, and gathering cultural practices, also affecting our treaty rights. Heavy rainstorms are more frequent, and they increase the risk of flooding, which means more pollutants running from the land to water. Increased pollutant runoff potentially causes the development of more algal blooms. Algal blooms are unsightly and harm fish and degrade water quality by creating dead zones in our life-sustaining water. The ice cover on Great Lakes is forming later and melting sooner. The shorter and warmer winters threatens Wisconsin tourism for Wisconsin recreation like ice fishing, snowmobiling, skiing, snowboarding, which many of our brothers and sisters to the north rely upon to support their communities. Also, the changing climate inevitably shifts our ecosystems. It affects the range of plants and animal life, from which affects the composition of our north woods, our fish, our bird populations, when flowers bloom, and when animals reproduce. In 2007, Wisconsin created a global warming task force with the goal to make Wisconsin a leader in the implementation of solutions to address climate change. This is a real national emergency.
Stock picks, rising.
Yes. Park admission fees. So the DNR went to basically demand-based system, several parks after the last budget. In a six-month period, end of 2018, last half of 18 after they did it, $1 million more. So it's working. They like it and keep doing it. So, you know, a little bit of boost of revenue there.
Peninsula State Park, Baraboo, mm-hmm. popular.
Ones are, yeah.
Okay.
So Ron Kind mixed.
Mixed.
Look, we're seeing Republican groups kind of ramping up the pressure on Ron Kind. The NRCC has been popping off more about him. The National Republican Congressional Committee, you know, sending more of us the blast releases of Ron Kind said this, Ron Kind voted this way. Americans for Prosperity is doing, they are doing digital ads in the congressional district talking about opposing a gas tax hike of 25 cents. There is a proposal being pushed by like the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and AFL-CIO and others to jack up the gas tax that much at the federal level. It's a sign of what maybe we're going to see next fall. And Ron Kind, look, he's been there for 20 years, didn't have much of a challenge in 2018. But in 2016, President Trump won the district. Now, Ron Kind was unopposed re-election that fall.
Unopposed.
Republicans won't make that mistake again. And it's interesting talking to people. It's like, well, is he really vulnerable? Well, you know, he won big in 2018, and, you know, 2016 may have been an aberration. So, you know, here's the thing for Trump. He can't afford not to target the third district. And why? Because it's rural. There are a lot of white, blue-collar voters there. That's his, like, audience, right? So they kind of have to do well.
And the prices are in the tank.
They have to do well places like that. Now, part of this also might be this early effort might be about, like, trying to convince somebody it's worthwhile to run against Ron Kind. Because last time it happened, it didn't really get a whole lot of support. So just keep an eye on that one. I don't know if Kind's in a lot of trouble, but he's going to get pressured. And again, the Republicans kind of have to because Trump needs to do well in Western Wisconsin next fall.
Okay, falling.
So the R word. Look, I bring it up more unanimous votes, both voice votes in the houses to pass this bill. But I bring this up more because, you know, that's kind of unusual. But even when they agree, Steve, they can't agree on how to agree. You know, so you have one. Remember, Republicans were hot to trot because Governor Evers, the day before the public hearing on the bill, issued an executive order to remove these terms from administrative rules. They weren't happy about that. Then this week, during a news conference talking about the floor session, they released these open records requests they got where the governor's office was talking about how to do this, knowing the bill was there. Again, it's a symbol. A small, albeit small one, but it's a symbol of the disconnect in the Capitol right now between Republicans and Democrats, and does not bode well for this big thing we have to get done sometime this summer called a budget,
right?
Where they need to make a major compromise on things from taxes to spending to policy. If you can't get all on that, if you can't get together on this, what can you get together on? That's why I bring it up.
Okay, let's talk about next week. Monday is the deadline to file taxes. Mm-hmm. I wrote my refund check 2 days ago. Have you filed yet, Jay?
It's sitting on the counter to go in the mail on Saturday.
I understand. And also, Wisconsin is going to be at the budget public hearing in River Falls on Monday. And let's talk about the Supreme Court, as we said, asked both sides, gave both sides Monday and Tuesday deadlines to file in this reappointments in lame duck.
One is about the basically taking up that issue about restoring the appointments.
Yep.
One is about taking original jurisdiction. There are unique issues in this case, and they're asking the court, you should take this without the appeals court going any further. You should just take it. So, dual request.
Could we get a ruling that we're talking about a week from today?
The justices can do whatever they want to do. They are in charge.
Absolutely. Just this note, we do have a podcast, and JR and I are ecstatic. Please subscribe to Rewind, Your Week in Review. You can do that by subscribing today on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Pocket Casts. That's pretty cool, JR. Okay. And we're overdue for that. I'm sorry. I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm JR Ross.
Rewind for April 12.